5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all of your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Hello, and welcome to episode 5 of Brokenomics. And in this episode, we're going to be talking about this stuff, gold. But before I do that, I just want to say a big thank you to the audience. So we've got a couple of the episodes, the first episodes of Brokenomics Live on the website at the time of recording. And I've just been overwhelmed by the positive response that we've had from the viewers. So many very enthusiastic, positive comments. Really appreciate it. Thank you so much for all the kind words. And also thank you for those few who had criticisms as well. So, you know, we like to hear it all. Thank you very much for that. And we will try and endeavour with the rest of the series as we go. And actually, this one, I'm hopeful, is going to be slightly more optimistic. In the previous episodes, we've been rather black-pilled, haven't we? We've been talking about the failings of the financial system. But what we haven't done is talked about any of the potential solutions. And there are some. Now, I think that you would hopefully agree with me, if you've been following along so far, that we really do need a hard money system. That fiat money is at the root of so many of the problems that we currently have. Now, there are not many potentially viable alternatives when it comes to the hard money systems, but there are some, such as gold and Bitcoin, and potentially in the future, the BRICS currency. So BRICS stands for Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa, and they are working on a commodity-based currency-backed that they'll be using. And I would do a video on that at some point, but they haven't really announced anything for me to base it on. So apart from a bunch of speculation, I've got a lot to go on there. But what I can do in this episode is gold, and I can get into Bitcoin in the following episode, and we can look at those. Now, both of them would be a significant improvement over where we are at the moment, although they do both have significant limitations. But, you know, let's get into it. Let's look at both and see what we can say about it. So before I do so, let's talk about how gold is made, where it comes from. And look, while I am no physicist, so don't hold me to anything if I get some of the details wrong. But my understanding is that gold is created in a process called stellar nucleosynthesis. So that is in stars, effectively. But what makes gold special? So for example, our star can produce, is doing it all the time. It's converting helium into hydrogen and will eventually go up as far, I think, as iron. And then it sort of craps out at the end of its life. Gold can only be produced in a very, very small number of stars, a tiny percentage of the overall, only the largest stars where it's capable of the greatest heat and pressure. And even then, it can't actually produce elements such as gold, the heavier elements, until the last few seconds of its life, just before it goes into supernova. So not only can gold only be created in a tiny proportion of the universe's stars, it can only be created in the last few moments of those small number of stars' lives. So the point I'm making with this basically is that gold is rare everywhere, not just rare on Earth. It's not just a precious metal here. Everywhere in the universe, gold is rare. Now, how do we have it here? Well, the protoplanetary disk that our solar system was formed from contained plenty of gold, and there would have been plenty of gold. Well, I say plenty proportionally anyway. There would have been some in the accretion disk that formed the Earth, although most of that would have then sunk to the iron core at the centre of the Earth, so it's a bit inaccessible. But about 200 million years ago, there was a big barrage of meteors. Some of them would have included gold meteors, and they would have crashed down on Earth and sort of melded themselves into the terrain. And that's why you find gold located at these sort of weird locations. You know, you get a lot of gold in South Africa. You get some in Uganda. You get some in California. You get something in Canada. But you don't find it universally all over the place. And that's why it's just wherever those meteors happen to hit. So you've got a random distribution across the Earth. And of course, that applies to the other special metals as well. So even though I'm mainly talking about this is an ounce of gold. Let's see, we can give you a zoom in of that at some point. Now, one of these, 1 ounce of gold, that's worth about £1,500 at the moment at the time of recording. Other precious metals that is often used as well is this one. This is silver. That is an ounce of silver. And ooh, as you can see, both the same weight. The gold is a bit more dense, and so therefore the gold one is a bit smaller. This silver is about £20 worth of silver, an ounce of silver. And also, probably won't get much of a mention in the video, but I'll show it anyway. This is platinum, which is even denser than gold, I believe. And that one, interestingly, despite being even rarer than gold, is worth about £1,200. And the main difference is that this is not used as a monetary asset, whereas gold is. So, I talked about how they're rare in their formation, but they're rare in our world as well. So the total amount of gold that has ever been mined, if you were to take all of the gold that's ever been mined throughout human history, you'd have enough to fill about 3 Olympic swimming pools. So it's not a lot. Platinum, you'd only come up to your ankles in the first swimming pool. So, you know, this is rare, but whatever, it's cheaper than gold for some reason. There is a lot more silver, but silver does degrade. So probably half of all the silver that's ever been mined is now degraded in one form or another. I think each Tomahawk missile contains about 15 kilos of silver. So, you know, that's one of the ways that it can degrade, and I'm sure there are many others as well. And it's difficult to extract this stuff as well. So to get 1 ounce of gold, so this much gold, right? Gold mining companies need to mine somewhere between 2 and 90 tons of gold or rock, right? So 90 tons, potentially, sometimes more even, 90 tons of gold or rock to reduce it down to this much pure gold. So, so it is indeed a rare and special metal. Silver and platinum, by the way, they tend to be produced as the as a byproduct of mining for other metals. So there's a bunch of other metals that are produced commercially, and they extract out the silver from those methods, whereas typically with gold, you're mining just for that. So the other thing to take from that, of course, is that gold mining is a very energy intensive process, so that's something to bear in mind. You could be bullish on gold, but bearish on energy costs, and that will factor into whether you want to make investments into gold mining stocks, for example. Now, the ratio between gold and silver, that's also worth talking about this early stage. So there is 19 times as much silver as there is gold. Okay, and throughout history, we've had the gold-silver ratio. So the Romans used 12 to 1. So they said that 12 silver coins of equal weight came to 1 gold coin. And the US Constitution, I believe, they fixed it at 15 to 1. So the ratio of 15 silver coins to 1 gold coin of equal weight. So those are historically the records. Like I say, there is the natural rate is about 19 times. Interestingly, at the moment, the price of silver is implying a ratio of 78 to 1. So that's why a lot of people believe at the moment that that silver is potentially more attractive, because it is significantly below historic rates. Okay, so now let's get on to the meat and potatoes of this video, and I'm going to throw up this graphic. Now, what this is what the properties of money should be, with the properties that money should have. So as you can see, these are the various characteristics which all money should have. So let's think about this graphic in terms of this stuff, paper money. So going around, fungible. One unit is viewed as interchangeable with another. Yeah, so I've got two £5 notes here, and both of them are, they're not exactly the same. So the serial code on the back of them is different, but nevertheless, they are viewed as completely fungible, completely interchangeable with another. So big win for paper money on that one. Durable, an item must be able to withstand being repeatedly used. Well, I mean, to an extent, I mean, they're not too bad, these modern banknotes. They last for a bit, and there's quite a good process for taking them out of circulation, replacing them when they start to get a bit tatty. So, you know, half marks to paper money on durable. Portable, individuals can carry money with them and transfer it to others. Yeah, that's basically why the big advantage of paper money, and why we sort of transitioned over to that in the 17th, 18th century, something around that mark. Uniform, all versions of the same denomination must have the same purchasing power. Yep, exactly right. These two £5 notes, they have the same purchasing power. Divisible, can be divided into smaller units. Well, yes, so this £10 note can be split into these two £5 notes, and this £5 note, you know, pound coins and all the rest of it. So yeah, no problem in divisible. And acceptable, so yeah, within these hallowed aisles, everybody does accept banknotes, apart from Costa Coffee, who've gone contactless now only, and other places that you should potentially not shop at anymore. So yeah, that's pretty good. So paper money passes on that one. Right, and here's the big problem, and that's of course what we've been talking about in the previous videos, which is this last characteristic of money, which is limited in supply. No, it has failed quite significantly on this one, as I'm sure you've noticed from the various talks in previous Brokenomic videos. In 2020, depending on which country you live in, but basically all Western nations increased the amount of money in circulation out of thin air by something like 30 or 40%. You know, they just made it up. So that is where paper money falls down very significantly. On these sort of properties of money. So, and it's really that last problem, which is driving so much of the inequities. You've heard me talk about how it is driving an enlarged finance sector and an enlarged government. And it's also forcing centralization, because the returns from capital exceed, quite disproportionately, exceed the returns on deploying your labor. So basically, people who earn money from investments, who are rent seeking off their stocks and shares, and you know, landlords and that sort of thing, as opposed to people go out to work. That balance, you know, both of those should be viable, but the imbalance has become quite marked, and it is a increasing failure. You've heard me talk about how this is driving centralization, more and more power to government, and I've put to you thought experiments of, you know, what does a smart criminal do? Does he run around robbing banks, or does he get himself elected because of this centralization effect? So that is a significant failing, and so you can see why so many people want to talk about a return to a hard money standard. So historically, every major civilization has used gold and silver for the last 5,000 years, because of those things that I showed you, gold fulfills all of those. It is rare, fundamentally. That's the most important characteristic of it, as we started the talk with. And it only fell down in durability, and that's why we sort of got into, we'll come to that more, but that's why we sort of got led into paper money in the first place. Like I say, every major historic civilization has used that, normally a binomial standard, so gold and silver standard. And at various times, paper money has been tried, and on every single occasion, it always ends up going the same way, which is eventually governments who are issuing the paper money, they look at this and they think, oh, that's good, isn't it? Why don't we just issue more? So you go back to, you know, let's pick Roman times. The Romans had both gold coins, I think it's called the Aurolis, something like that, and they had the silver coins, the denaries. Oh, that's a Game of Thrones character. No, I think it was the Daenerys, something like that. And that was what they used to drive their empire. And at one point, when the Romans started to run out of money, they started issuing something called the double denarii, which was a coin which was supposed to be worth two denaries, but it contained the same amount of silver as one denarii. And this happened at various points along the way with the Romans. And, you know, there are various instances of this. So I mean, at one point, the Roman soldiers, they refused to fight for the denaries anymore. They said, look, we fight, but we're going to want the gold because you have debased the silver so much. Every other attempt, and that wasn't so much a paper standard, but I think the paper standard came from the Qing dynasty in China. Somewhere like 900 AD, something like that, they started using paper and various other attempts. And like I say, always ends in the same way, which is basically printing more. And then the whole system, everyone loses faith in it. So, it doesn't work. Now, how do we get onto the paper standard in modern terms? So how did it come to Europe? And effectively, it started with goldsmiths. So goldsmiths would often be charged with safekeeping the gold, looking after it in their vaults. And what they would do is they would issue paper certificates to people who were safeguarding their gold with them, you know, to something like, you know, you have deposited with me, five gold coins, and this certificate allows you to redeem them from us. And basically what started happening is people started trading the notes instead of having to go and get the gold first and then giving the gold to somebody. And, you know, they just traded the notes amongst themselves. So we sort of naturally evolved into a paper standard, which of course then became more and more abused and more and more taken over by the states. Back then, we often had the problems with bank runs that continued for a long time. The story of the film Mary Poppins, for example, you know, features a bank run quite heavily in that, based on the gold standard. And from the earliest days of that, it was essentially because, you know, the goldsmiths they often had the gold, but they would loan it out. And if somebody thought that their gold wasn't safe, they would come and collect their gold. And if enough people did that, then the goldsmith wasn't able to honour all of the obligations that it had because some of it was out on loan. So even though they might have been solvent, which is to say they did actually have the gold, they just weren't liquid, which to mean they didn't have it right then and there. And actually this distinction, I add that in, the distinction between being solvent and being liquid is if you start paying more attention to the financial press, it is something which comes up a lot. So it was a lot of the issues that we had back in 2008 that banks were saying, oh no, we are solvent, as in we do have the money, we're just liquid, we don't have it right now. And because we're going through a turbulent period, that creates problems for us. It's also interestingly the argument that Sam Bankman-Fried tried to make in the early days of the FTX collapse. You know, he kept on tweeting out that, you know, don't worry, we're solvent, we have got customer deposits, we're just not liquid, that we just can't lay it on right at this particular moment. And of course, in his case, he was just lying because he's a massive criminal. Okay, so end of the gold standard. Britain had been using a gold standard, the nation, the people of Britain had been using a gold standard for thousands of years, but officially Britain had adopted a gold standard formally back in the early part of the 19th century. And that ran up until about 1914, when basically we were spending too much money on World War I. And we didn't have enough gold, so we came off the gold standard, then we partially restored it in 1925, and then left it again in 1931 again, because we kind of ran out of money. And you might remember that I talked a lot about the end of the gold standard in my initial video, the introduction video, because I talked about what happened at the end of the World War II, where basically America ended up with a lot of the gold, partly because it had earned it and partly because it was safe keeping it for other nations. And rather than return the gold to people, we had a bit of a bankers get together, a bit of a nations get together, and came up with the idea of the Bretton Woods system, where global trade would be facilitated by the dollar. Now, I do want to do a video on 1971 at some point, so I won't go too much into the details of all of this. But essentially, it was the dollar was going to be linked to gold at a fixed rate. So for them, it was $35 equaled 1 ounce of gold. And then $1 would equal a fixed amount of, you know, whatever, pounds, francs, Deutschmarks, you know, whatever it was. You know, so there was the dollar to gold was fixed, and then dollar to many was fixed after that. Okay. What happened with that? Well, they did what governments always do, which is they overspent. So in America's case, and I'll get into more detail in this in the 1971 video, but, you know, essentially the US spent money on, you know, Great Society programs and some of the FDR programs and some of the other stuff. And of course, the big one is always war. So that they had the Vietnam War and they basically couldn't pay for it. And the French started saying, well, I don't think you're good for this, so give us our gold back. And that effectively led to Nixon having to end the gold standard because he couldn't honor those gold promises, which then led us to the petrodollar, which I want to do a video as well, because that was an absolute masterstroke, that thing. The thing that Biden doesn't quite understand what he's doing by trashing it at the moment. But again, another video, but just had to mention the end of the gold standard, of course, in this one. So let's talk a bit more about where we are today. So let's have a look at some of the nations. The US. The US is supposed to have something like 8,300 tons of gold, which is quite a lot. It's supposed to keep most of that in Fort Knox. Big secure compound in, is it Kentucky? Sounds about right. Now, Fort Knox doesn't get a lot of audits, that thing. Only one US president, FDR, has ever been inside of it. I think in 1974, rumours started to swirl that basically they didn't have the gold. Again, linked to that whole 1971 thing. And so a group of congressmen were allowed inside back in 1974 and they had a look at it. And that was basically the last that I'm aware of where there's been sort of any hint of official oversight outside of the Treasury Department. Ron Paul, I don't know if you're familiar with him, but hero to those of us on the Austrian economic right. He has been putting forward. I mean, he was a congressman for many years, and he put forward many bills trying to audit the Fed, but also he wanted to visit Ron Paul. He wanted to visit Fort Knox, and he was rebuffed many times. And I'm sure anyone else who tries to get a look inside that place will also be rebuffed. So, you know, the US claims it has about 8,300 tons of gold, and, you know, maybe it does. The UK. The UK has something like 310 tons, maybe a bit more, something like that. We used to have a lot more. Actually, we used to have quite a bit more, and then Gordon Brown came along. So he came along and he decided to sell 401 tons of gold to diversify into other assets. So basically, other people's paper money, which was a silly idea. So he raised for that 401 tons of gold that he sold, he raised $3.5 billion, which is about £2.2 billion back in 1991. And it was basically implies a price of $275 per ounce of gold. It's now about seven times that. It's now, was it $1,800? Dollars per ounce, and as I told you, it's about £1,500 per ounce. Yeah, the Gordon Brown thing, that was a mess. So what Gordon Brown did in his unbelievably cack-handed way, I mean, the way he, it's one thing to say that you want to diversify away from gold. I mean, obviously, in retrospect, that was silly. I thought it was silly at the time. But, you know, let's say that you feel it is a legitimate political thing to do. The way you would do that is you would then quietly reach out to market participants with clout. You know, as much as I would hate to give somebody like Goldman Sachs fees, you could have gone to them and say, look, I want to place 100 tons of gold with you, and they would give them a discount of like 5% to whatever the current price was, and then they would feed it out sensibly into the market. Gordon Brown did not do that. What Gordon Brown did was he announced in advance when he was going to be selling a huge amount of gold just straight out into the market. And I've heard reliable accounts that senior finance people had meetings with him and begged him not to do it like that. Do it, if you're going to do it another way. Because, of course, what the gold traders did, and this is subsequently referred to as the Brown Bottom, is they made sure that on the days that he was selling gold, they pushed the price of gold down to ridiculously low levels, took all the gold off him at that cheap rate, and then let the price return to the market rate. It was a completely mad thing to do. Now, you know, that was back in 1999, so I was only just leaving university at that time, and I looked at this back then, and I thought, this is completely insane. So I betted against it. In financial terms, I used a bit like options. I used warrants to basically leverage up a bet against it. But I didn't go in that hard because I looked at it and I thought, this is so obviously mad that there must be some angle of this that I don't understand, because surely people in government are not as incompetent as they clearly look like they are. And actually they were. They were that incompetent.
Hi, folks. I hope you've been enjoying Brokenomics. I have, and I've been learning a lot, which is good because I know nothing about economics, or at least I didn't before starting to watch this. So for the next episode, Dan was thinking about doing a question and answer session with me posing the questions, because when you come from a perspective of expertise, you don't realize what it is that people want further explained until they tell you. And so if you could leave either video comments or written comments at the bottom of this podcast to let us know what you would like him to explain further or more explicitly, I will present them to him in the next episode, and hopefully we'll get all of the answers that we're looking for. Thanks a lot, folks.
To watch the full video, please become a premium member at lotuseaters.com.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.